Heart disease, what we might call cardiovascular disease, is a major cause of death in the developed countries like the United States, France, England, and those on the high-fat, high-cholesterol diets around the world. Now, we have what we call a risk factor concept. That is, what are the risk factors that create the problem for heart disease? What are the major risks that create the greater incidence of heart disease? Well, we used to think about heredity being a major risk. We used to think about stress, inactivity, diet, smoking, high blood pressure, even pesticides and additives. Some physicians tell us that if you're a male, you have a higher risk than a female. Well, just what is the evidence on the risk factors? In World War II, we learned quite a few things about heart disease. First of all, many investigators were looking forward to a much higher death rate in heart disease in World War II because of the tremendous stress in those companies under the stress of the war. And England and Wales, for example, were studied very closely because we certainly thought that heart disease deaths would increase in England and Wales during the war. And it was quite surprising to find that in 1944, one of the most stressful years of the war, when they had the firebombing and all the other problems during the peak of the war period, that heart disease deaths dropped to 50% of pre-war levels. And the surprising fact was that when the war was over and the very restricted diet they had during the war was given up and they had their normal diet, heart disease deaths increased and exceeded pre-war levels. In fact, in Austria in 1958, when everything was calm, there was no stress because everybody had a job, reconstruction of all the buildings and so on had been finished, and there was strudel in all the Austrian bakeries, and yet heart disease deaths were 700% higher in 1958 than they were in 1944 when Hitler was walking all over the place causing great stress. No, there was another factor there that it was unrelated to stress. And it took a little while for investigators to figure it out. And investigators like Dr. Ansel Keys of the University of Minnesota went through post-war, War II, Europe, and others went through, and they finally realized that only in those countries in Europe under the war that had restricted substantially their intake of fat and cholesterol foods were those countries where the rates of heart disease dropped. Countries that had no restriction had no drop at all. In the United States, for example, where there was no restriction of foods, there was an increase in heart disease death rate. So we began to see that diet was very greatly related with heart disease in the World War II scene. Now, when World War II was over, the large studies started in our country, and we call them prospective studies. That is, we watched them as they went. And one of the studies was a Framingham study in Framingham, Massachusetts. Here, 5,200 people volunteered to partake in what might be called the largest ongoing study ever done. It's been going on since 1948. And these 5,200 people were given no advice whatsoever. They were simply monitored every 2 years with a complete physical examination. And the idea was to see what relationships we could discover relating to their onset of diseases. What circumstances perhaps may precipitate their heart disease, or strokes, or diabetes, breast cancer, colon cancer, and so on. And for all these years, we've been monitoring the Framingham study. Other studies started around the same time, the Minnesota study, the Albany study, and all of these studies seem to indicate the same relationship. That is, that cholesterol level was the principal risk factor correlated with heart disease. And what the studies also found out is that the so-called normal cholesterol levels in our country were only normal for a very sick population, but they certainly were absolutely abnormal as far as cholesterol levels were concerned. For example, the Framingham study found out that if your cholesterol level was 260 milligrams per cent or higher, you had a 400% greater incidence of cardiovascular deaths than if it was below 200 milligrams per cent. Yet in our country, if your laboratory gives you out your cholesterol level, they'll have their what they call a normal range. And the normal range will say 160 to 300 or 160 to 330. Now, many physicians interpret this as saying if your cholesterol is 300, that's fine. You're in the high normal range. But yet the Framingham study tells us that that's not true. If your cholesterol is over 260, you're in a disastrous range. In fact, the average cholesterol level of the person who drops dead of heart disease is somewhere around 240. So certainly you don't want to be up in that range and still consider as a normal range. You certainly want to get down below 200 to lessen your risk of heart disease, as the Framingham, Minneapolis, and the Albany studies all tell us. Now, as far as the stress theory, Framingham sort of put that to rest by their very large study on stress. They took 1,822 members of their study, and they started them in 1965 and typed them to what we call type A and type B behavior. This is a classification devised by the experts in the stress heart disease theory, Drs. Meyer, Friedman, and Ray Roseman. And they typed them, and they found out and reported in 1978, 13 years later, and here's what they say. The Framingham type A behavioral pattern and other psychosocial measures were not related to the level of heart disease risks, as determined by the Framingham study. So here we find that after 13 years, that there was no relationship with stress in 1,822 people. Now, this is the largest population, I believe, ever analyzed for stress, and it certainly is going to make it very hard for the stress advocates to show that stress is anything but a very small risk factor in heart disease. A little bit later, Cleveland Clinic came up with their angiographic studies. Now, an angiogram is an x-ray of the inside of your arteries, and they were particularly interested in the coronary arteries. Cleveland Clinic is almost where the art of angiography or x-rays of coronary arteries was discovered or first evolved. Dr. Mason Soans there was the man that devised a particular catheter, or a hollow tube that goes up through your artery to inject the dye so that you can take the x-rays. So they've done thousands of those at Cleveland Clinic, and they reported one large study of 17 to 39-year-old men, 723 men. These all had coronary angiograms, and they, by analyzing this data, found out there was a very specific relationship between the amount of coronary artery closure and their cholesterol level. In fact, this was the most specific relationship. Now, if you remember, you have only three vessels feeding your heart. These are called the coronary vessels, and you have a right coronary artery, and then you have two left coronary arteries that are really branches of a short main coronary artery. But these two left coronary arteries then, and the right, are the three vessels and their branches that feed the entire heart muscle. And these are rather small little arteries. They're probably the size of a pencil in diameter, but that's all that you get for all the exercise you have to do. So I think since they were small, nature intended for them never to close. But nature, never having contended with the modern high-fat, high-cholesterol diet, made them probably too small for modern days. But nevertheless, Cleveland Clinic found that the closure of the coronary arteries is directly related to the cholesterol level, and here's what they found. First of all, they defined it as a significant closure. That means more than 50% of the arteries closed. And they said these young men had significant closure. If their cholesterol level was less than 200, only 20% of the men had significant closure, more than 50%. If it's less than 200, but if their cholesterol level averaged 235, almost half the men had significant closure. What a jump, and 235 is considered very normal. In fact, President Carter's physician recently said, Jimmy's in perfect health. His cholesterol is 239. Well, that's certainly not a good number when you consider that when you get around 240, that's the average cholesterol of the guy that drops dead of heart disease. And here among these men, 17 to 39, a cholesterol 235 means that half of them have at least 50% closure of all three of their coronary arteries. So cholesterol level turns out to be a very important indicator of artery closure. In fact, Cleveland Clinic did a double-blind test. That means neither the patients coming in or the doctors who evaluated them initially ever met the patients in the beginning. And what they did was this. 60 patients coming into the Cleveland Clinic were involved in what we call a double-blind test then. And all that was taken was their age, their cholesterol level, and their triglyceride level. Triglycerides are a kind of fat in the bloodstream. And based on this, the doctors who had never had to see the patients went to their prediction tables because of all the many angiograms they'd done. They'd gotten now relationships between artery closure and cholesterol level. The age was important because it told them how long these men had been to that cholesterol level. And they made an analysis as to which of these men would have closed, significantly closed coronary arteries. And out of the 60 men, they made their predictions, wrote them down, and went to a sealed envelope. The men went into the catheterization laboratories, had their angiograms, and they were evaluated, and they were tabulated, and then they were compared with the original predictions. Out of the original 60 predictions, 59 out of 60 predictions were 100% accurate. That's a 98% degree of predictive accuracy. There's hardly a test in the world that's that accurate, and yet Cleveland Clinic did it just based on their cholesterol levels, primarily to determine their artery closure. So if anyone tells you that total cholesterol is not predictive of artery closure, we can refer them to the Cleveland Clinic studies. Now, there is a great confusion over what is a normal cholesterol level, and I think perhaps the confusion is because cholesterol levels in our country are taken as an average. We take a population 20 to 30 years old, 30 to 40, 40 to 50, and we take a population that doesn't have symptoms yet. They can be dying the next day of a heart attack, but today they still seem to be okay. We take this population, we take their various values, cholesterol level, triglycerides, glucose, and so on, and these are the normal range. All these people comprise a normal range. And in our country, the so-called normal range of cholesterol, as I mentioned, is 160 to 330. Because that's what the average person has. But remember, the average person in our country is very sick of heart disease, but the symptoms haven't come yet. After all, when you have a nation where 52% of all the deaths are from heart disease, you know we're a very sick country. It's an epidemic. So certainly you wouldn't want these countries' levels as a normal level. You'd want to go to countries where heart disease is unknown. And when you have heart disease where it's unknown and go to those countries, you'll find that cholesterol levels do not exceed 160 milligrams per cent. And that should be our aim, to bring our cholesterol levels down below 160 if we want to avoid heart disease. Practically no exceptions have ever been found in countries under 160 that have any heart disease at all. There's been one exception, and that's the Maasai in Africa, who have cholesterol levels of 135, and yet they eat the same amount of cholesterol and fat as we do in our country. Dr. George Mann of Vanderbilt University found out the reason for that. They eat a lot and drink a lot of milk products. It's soured milk, and it turns out that milk has a cholesterol-lowering effect. Depresses the cholesterol out of the blood, but obviously goes right into the arteries because in Dr. Mann's mass eyes that he examined, they have such massive plaques in their arteries that it's far worse than American arteries. Their plaque starts 15 years earlier than American arteries. So it's no great advantage for them to have a cholesterol of 135 and depress it artificially. But if you're on a diet where you don't have artificial depressants like the high amount of milk or polyunsaturated fats, then you can pretty much depend on your cholesterol level being a true indicator of the state of your arteries. Various authorities have told us that if you reduce cholesterol level, even though you have a high cholesterol level, down below 150, you have a good chance for even having your artery closure reverse. And that's something we're going to talk about, because first I'd like to then talk to you about artery walls. What does an artery wall look like? Well, if you can picture a tire, because an artery wall has three principal layers. There's an inside layer called an intima, and then there's a middle layer called the media, and the media is made up of primarily muscle cells. That's the muscle layer. That's the layer that squeezes the artery so that it can divert blood from one place to another, so you can decide where you want the major part of your blood. After you want to eat your dinner, you'd like a lot of blood to your stomach to digest the food. And when you want to run, you want it to your legs. And so the arteries do that with the muscle layer. The outside layer of the artery is called the adventitia. It's the protective layer that keeps it all together. Now, the adventitia has its own circulatory system that feeds all its little cells. But the media layer and the intima layer have no circulatory system. They have to depend upon their oxygen and their food coming through the inside layer of the artery in order to be able to get all the oxygen and the food they need. Now, the way that works is that the inside layer of the artery, called the intima, has a single cell lining called an endothelial layer. And this single cell lining acts like a filter to let all these food products and oxygen filter through into the two inside layers. And all the blood flows through the endothelial layer. Endothelial means inside skin. It's the inside skin of the artery. Now, the problem with that is that as long as you have enough oxygen in the blood, you have no problems. But what if your blood is low in oxygen because you're a smoker and you're breathing carbon monoxide, and the carbon monoxide paralyzes your red blood cells, so the red blood cells can't pick up oxygen, so you'd have a low oxygen level there. What if you have a low oxygen level because you're on a normal American high-fat diet? The high-fat diet gets into the bloodstream, and the fat acts like an adhesive, covers all the little cells with fat, and they start to stick together. When they stick together, they form clumps of cells, and the clumps of cells cannot get through the blood vessels. And when a cell is clumped together, it can't pick up oxygen. So for these reasons, you could have a low oxygen level. And when that happens, and the blood level drops too low in oxygen, gets too much fat in the blood, there is not enough oxygen to get right up to the last little cells in the media that require it. So the media cries out some way we don't understand and tells the endothelial layer, that inside skin of the artery, to let more stuff come in. Say, we're suffocating back here. Let more stuff come in. So what happens at the inside skin, the endothelial layer, becomes porous. It changes its permeability. It sort of develops pores. It opens up its spaces so more stuff can come in. And once it does this, that's a mistake, because now certain particles traveling in the bloodstream made of fat and cholesterol can get through the endothelial layer inside the artery wall. In nature, this never happened before, because never did it happen that man ever had low oxygen levels in his blood due to smoking and high-fat diets. But now, in modern times, that's one of the problems. And when this happens, these fat and cholesterol particles that are so high in the blood, because we eat so much cholesterol, get inside the artery wall. When they get inside, it's just like salt on an open wound. There's so much turmoil and so much confusion inside the artery wall when these cholesterol particles get inside that the media cells travel and they start to eat these intruders. Now, normally the media cells don't eat anything at all. They're just muscle cells. But the confusion and the problems and the turmoil that happens when these cholesterol particles called beta-lipoprotein particles get inside the artery wall, the media cells go out to eat them. And to eat them, they start to bloat with them. And they eat and eat and eat until they're so swelled that they look like globs of fat. In fact, we call them foam cells because they look like fat. And one of the first signs of this problem is what we call a fatty streak. You can see it in an 8-year-old child. There's a streak when you open up their arteries. They're killed in some accident. And you open up their artery and you got about a half-inch long streak, about a 16th of an inch high and a 16th of an inch wide. Looks like a fatty streak. It's not a fatty streak. It's right under the inside skin, and it's filled with fatty, laden media cells. Now, at this rate, if you cut down the fat in the blood, all that fat can reabsorb and disappear. All the cells are still alive. But if you permit high quantities of fat and cholesterol into the blood and permit this to continue, what happens is that these media cells eat so much until they burst. Because in nature, there are no rules. They don't know what to do, and they just keep eating until they burst. When they burst, they vomit their fat and cholesterol all over the other cells, and that starts to form a dead mass of fat, cholesterol, dead cells, and so on, right inside the artery wall. Now, more and more media cells come into the space, and as they do, the inside skin, that endothelial layer, starts to bulge. And as it bulges, it's like a little boil growing. And the greater the bulge, the less room there is for blood to flow, because as it bulges right out into the area where blood is flowing. This bulge is called a plaque. Technically, it's called an atheroma. In Greek, the term atheroma means gruel, G-R-U-E-L, like cream of wheat. And the reason for that is that when you take one of these plaques and you open them up, the stuff inside looks just like cream of wheat. It looks like cornmeal. That's why we call it a gruel, because it's soft, mushy stuff. And that's what the inside of a plaque looks like. Now, it used to be they called this kind of problem arteriosclerosis. But that means hardening of the arteries. Well, that wasn't accurate. So they decided they better find another name for this. And that's why this term now, adapted from the Greek atheroma, meaning gruel, they call atherosclerosis, which means hardening of the arteries with a mushy deposit. It makes it consistent with the old term arteriosclerosis. But of course, it doesn't make any sense because you don't harden arteries with a mushy deposit. But yet, that's what atherosclerosis means. And the atheroma, or the plaque as we call it, is a boil, essentially, of cholesterol and cholesterol products and fat in it. Now, in some people, this boil or cholesterol plaque grows and gets very large. And sometimes it gets so large it covers 80 to 90% of the inside of that artery. That means only 10% of the space is left for blood to flow. Sometimes it closes up the artery completely. So it's sort of a tragedy. And the real tragedy is that the average 20-year-old in our country has at least a 20% closure of all his coronary arteries as an average at 20 years old. So you cannot say to a 20-year-old that when you get older, you'll have heart disease. What you have to say to them is that you're 20 years old and you have heart disease. It just hasn't broken out in the symptoms yet. A lot of 20-year-olds have at least one of the three coronary arteries 100% closed already. You read every day in the papers about a 15-year-old boy dropping dead on a basketball court from a heart attack. 25-year-olds are getting very common, 35-year-olds. That's almost an epidemic, having them die of heart attacks. So artery disease is something that happens from the time you're in your teens and continues through your life, which is shorter than it should be because the artery disease kills you. Now, in primates, monkeys, we learn quite a bit about artery disease. In fact, we learn how to produce artery disease by feeding them high-fat, high-cholesterol diets. One of the first studies was Dr. Mark Armstrong of the University of Iowa Medical School. Dr. Armstrong put his monkeys on two different diets. One, just a diet similar to what you might say would be grains, fruits, and vegetables, and the other, the same, except he added cholesterol. And it took a period of time for those monkeys to have artery changes. In 17 months, when he evaluated his monkeys, he found that those on the cholesterol diet had their coronary arteries two-thirds closed. Those without the cholesterol had no closure at all. So he then took the cholesterol out of the diet of those who were on cholesterol, and after a period of several months, the two-thirds closure, 65% closure of the coronary arteries, now became only 16% closed. That was a reduction of almost 75% in the closure of the arteries. It was the first time on a scale like this it had ever been demonstrated that primates, and that's what man is a primate, can close their arteries with too much cholesterol, and if you take the cholesterol away, can reopen them considerably. After the primate study, people criticized that, well, the Dr. Armstrong gave them too much cholesterol, and their cholesterol level went up to 600 milligrams per cent. That wouldn't happen with man. Well, that can happen with man. Stephenson, the explorer, the Arctic explorer that some of you may have remembered some years ago, went on an all-meat diet under the auspices of the American Meat Institute, and his cholesterol went up above 600, and it went up almost to 700. So you certainly can get cholesterol levels up if you're going to eat enough meat and enough cholesterol. No, primates and humans act very much the same. Fortunately, we now know that it's possible to reverse artery closure in humans. We have studies proven by coronary angiogram and other angiogram studies. We have demonstrated reversal in not only the coronary arteries, but that's been demonstrated by Dr. Henry Buchwald, University of Minnesota Medical School, reversal of kidney artery closure demonstrated by Dr. Basta, at that time was with the University of Iowa Medical School. Femoral artery in the legs reversal demonstrated by Dr. David Blankenhorn, also demonstrated by our own studies. We've also demonstrated reversal of iliac artery closure. So there's no question that narrowed or closed arteries can reverse themselves and reopen in humans. The question is, how do we get it to apply for the whole general population? Well, studies that have indicated how to lower cholesterol level, of course, are around. And there are certain population differences right in the United States. For example, you have the Seventh-day Adventists. Now, they're on three different kinds of diets. They're on the regular American diet. They're on a sort of dairy products and vegetarian diet. They're on a sort of a pure vegetarian diet. And the Seventh-day Adventists are a good group because they're mixed with the whole population. And we find that in that population, those on the lowest cholesterol intake have the least amount of heart disease and also the least amount of breast cancer. Those on the highest cholesterol intake among the Seventh-day Adventists have the highest amount of artery disease and the highest amount of breast cancer. So it's a disaster for those on the regular American diet, and it's much better for those that have much less cholesterol. So there are population differences there. As far as lowering cholesterol level, Dr. Castelli has talked about his vegetarians in Boston who have cholesterol levels below 150 milligrams per cent and seem to do very well. Now, since we realize that cholesterol level is a principal risk factor, that's certainly been documented in the Framingham studies and in the Cleveland Clinic studies and in the many studies, efforts have been made to drop cholesterol level in our country. And in the early 1950s, late 1940s, a number of investigators used the diet that was used in World War II in the food-restricted countries that restricted the fat and cholesterol very considerably. One of the earliest studies was done in 1948 by Dr. Morrison, Lester Morrison in Los Angeles, where he took 100 people with heart disease, put half of them on the diet, the food-restricted diet of World War II, and the other half on their conventional diet. The average cholesterol level was about 312 when they started, and for those who did not change their diet, it stayed there. And for those who did change their diet to the lower fat, lower cholesterol diet of World War II, their cholesterol dropped from 312 to 220. And his study ran for 12 years. And after 12 years, all those on the regular American diet had died, but on the low-fat, low-cholesterol diet, almost half of them were still alive. It was the first time that it was ever demonstrated that if you'll change your diet, you have a chance to extend your life and improve your health, even though you've had serious heart disease. Dr. John Goff and Dr. Lyon in San Francisco in 1952 did a study where they had a number of people on the diet of World War II, and compare that to the conventional American diet, and again, there was a big difference. There was a 75% drop in death rate for those on the lower fat, lower cholesterol diet compared to those on the regular American diet. When you take all the low fat, low cholesterol diets that were done between 1948 and 1970, there's about a 50% drop in death rate compared to the conventional American diet. Now, the American Heart Association, that was looking for some recommendation, should have used those experiences in giving their diet recommendations. But they didn't do it. They were worried that Americans perhaps were not smart enough to want to change their diet, even if it meant saving their lives from heart disease. And they were looking for some easy way out that Americans would comply in. And so they were watching closely, and in the late 50s, Dr. Lawrence Kinsell of University of California at Berkeley was able to demonstrate that if you use polyunsaturated fats, you can indeed lower your cholesterol in your blood. The only problem is, at that time, we saw that it lowered cholesterol in the blood, but we didn't know where the cholesterol went to when it went out of the blood. Today we know, and we're very unhappy about it, because it goes in your tissues, your organs, and even into your arteries. That's not the place to get rid of your cholesterol. Well, after the American Heart Association decided to give their first recommendation back in 1961, they simply said, we have a dietary recommendation for the American public. And the dietary recommendation is simple. It's don't change your diet. All you have to do is change the kind of fat that you use. Use polyunsaturated fats instead of saturated fats. The polyunsaturated fats are those liquid fats like corn oil, safflower oil, and so on, and use those instead of the animal fats like lard and butter and so on. And that was the whole recommendation. Now, it's been modified through the years where they ask you to cut your cholesterol a little bit, but principally, it's a high-fat, high-cholesterol diet through all these years, stressing polyunsaturated fats. Now, the American diet, the American Heart Association diet has been tested through the years. And they've had many tests in Helsinki, London, Oslo. In fact, the largest one they've had was at the Wadsworth VA Hospital in Los Angeles. And that one was 846 men. It was an 8-year trial, very elaborately set up. Dr. Seymour Dayton ran the study. After the end of the period of time, when they counted the deaths, they're amazed to find there's only a 2% difference in deaths, not significantly different. That was a tragedy. But they also found that those on the American Heart Association diet had 50% more cancer. Well, that I can question, because I don't think there's enough data to support that. But they did find that those on the American Heart Association diet had 3 times as many gallstones for them. Well, there's no question about that. They counted them when they took out the gallbladders. So the Heart Association diet didn't really help this man at all. In fact, if you take all the American Heart Association trials all together, you find that for every 100 people that die on the regular American diet, you only save 5 lives. 95 people die in the American Heart Association diet. But if you go to the low-fat, low-cholesterol diet of Dr. Morris and Dr. Goffman, only 50 people will die, a drop of 50% compared to 5% on the American Heart Association diet. The 5% drop on the American Heart Association diet is not considered to be statistically significant. That is, it could have happened by chance. Therefore, the critics all say that the American Heart Association diet has failed to demonstrate any change in heart disease deaths. And they're absolutely right. It's too moderate, and in getting major compliance to their diet, they also got minimum effectiveness. Now, the state of Israel, it was found, was on the American Heart Association diet just by chance. It was self-selected. In fact, they consumed the largest amount of polyunsaturated fats in the entire world. And when the Department of Agriculture discovered this, they were thrilled, because here's 1 million people right on the American Heart Association diet. What a marvelous chance to test them against some country who is on a high saturated fat diet. And where did they find that country but the state of West Germany? The two countries were teamed up in a race to see who had fewer heart disease deaths. It's a 3-year study sponsored and paid for by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. After the study was over, the sad news came in that the state of Israel had far more deaths from heart disease than the state of West Germany. How is that possible? Well, of course, the state of Israel consumed more fat than the state of West Germany, and they also had other problems. Dr. Blondheim, who ran the study for the state of Israel, had this to say. He said, "I can't understand it," he said, "because even our eggs were fried in polyunsaturated fat." Well, he better understand that egg yolks are the most potent source, ordinarily eaten, of cholesterol. And you can't have egg yolks unless you want to close your arteries. In fact, Dr. Blondheim is a little confused because in a recent study that was published, a recent article, Dr. Blondheim was quoted as saying that the Yemenites, who are desert dwellers outside of Israel, and heart disease is almost unknown among the Yemenites in their native culture, he said they come in and they come in on their primitive diet, which is very low in fat and so on. They come into Israel and we put them on the American Heart Association diet that's designed to stop heart disease, and in 10 years they all develop heart disease. How is that possible? They come in their inferior diet without heart disease and they get it on our superior diet as the American Heart Association diet. Well, Dr. Blondheim will have to understand that the American Heart Association diet certainly can precipitate and cause heart disease. With the Yemenite diet being so low in fat and cholesterol, you'd have a very low incidence of heart disease. So there's a lot of misunderstanding about diets. In fact, the very largest American Heart Association study ever done is the Mr. Fit study, and that's being done right now. Mr. Fit stands for Multiple Risk Factor Intervention Trial. And the idea is that there's more than one risk factor in heart disease. In this case, we're considering three risk factors. We're considering high cholesterol levels, high blood pressure, and smoking. And the three risk factors, the multiple risk factor study, is trying to reduce three risk factors. First, we want to cut smoking down if we can. Two, we want to drop blood pressure, 10% in the bottom number in the diastolic. But the first and most important thing is they want to reduce cholesterol level 10% in 6 years, because it's a six-year study. It's a very modest goal. Reducing cholesterol level 10% in 6 years, when on our diet we can reduce cholesterol level 10% in 6 days. So that you wonder why so modest a goal, but it's not difficult to see. It's a six-year study. 12,000 men are in this program. 6,000 on the regular American diet, 6,000 on the American Heart Association diet. Let's look at the American Heart Association data after 3 years, because the study is now in its fourth year. They were amazed to find that after 3 years, and these are my unofficial sources telling me this, that the cholesterol change of those on the American Heart Association diet compared to the regular diet was only 4% lower. Well, if you're only going to drop 4% in 3 years, you're never going to make 10% in 6 years. Well, I think that what happened is that the dietitians running the diet got very concerned, especially when some of the participants in the Mr. Fit study came to our center and they dropped their cholesterol 25% in just 3 weeks. So they came back and they contaminated their samples. They said, gee, we worked so hard getting our cholesterol to drop 4% in 3 years. We go to this place in California, we drop it 25% in 3 weeks. So a lot of people around the Mr. Fit group, a lot of the participants started to adapt my diet. And what the dietitians finally decided to do after 3 years was to make a dietary recommendation change. And they did it by themselves. They wrote it up in their own manual and distributed it under their name. And here's what it said. They said that new information tells us that if you want to be more effective in dropping your cholesterol level, you've got to consume less than 100 milligrams of cholesterol a day. Well, that's a very familiar figure. Where did it come from? I don't quite know, but that's the figure I quote in my book. And I've quoted my book since 1974, and I quoted my latest book. And that's our book recommendation. And I've talked to a number of these dietitians, and I said, where did you get the support data for that? And they said, well, we got out of the medical literature. I said, I don't know of any medical literature that shows any large population on this diet of less than 100 milligrams a day. And finally, the dietitian said, well, we looked at your data too. They certainly did, because there's nothing else that would tell them that this is such an effective cholesterol-lowering diet unless they looked at our information. Well, the nice thing is that all 6,000 people on the American Heart Association and the Mr. Fit study have now been recommended to use our cholesterol recommendations. In fact, when one of our participants wrote the American Heart Association and wrote to Dr. Mary Winston, who is chief of nutrition, some months ago, he said, how about this new dietary recommendation that they're using at the Mr. Fit study? Well, Dr. Winston says, I don't know anything about it. But a couple of months later, when they wrote to Dr. Mary Winston, she says, yes, yes, I know about it now. And there's no question that this new dietary recommendation of less than 100 milligrams a day of cholesterol is a far more effective way to reduce cholesterol level than the present recommendation we're giving them on the American Heart Association diet. Dr. Winston realized, of course, that you've got to drop the cholesterol intake if you're going to lower cholesterol level. Now, why isn't the American Heart Association giving this nice advice to all the people in the country? It's going to take time. The study has another 2 years to go, and it's going to take a year to evaluate the results. So in about 4 years from today, it'll come out in the medical literature. Fortunately, you don't have to wait 4 years for the American Heart Association to tell you to follow my recommendations. You can do it now. Now, there have been other interesting things about how to lower risk factors. If diet fails, which it has with the American Heart Association, the other thing we can do is give you drugs to lower your cholesterol level. And that was tried, and many drugs have been used to lower cholesterol level.
Thank you.